Chapter 67. Leaving the Swiss embassy was ridiculously easy. A tunnel had been dug 20 years before that dropped over 100 feet below the streets and sewer pipes, far beneath any shafts Cuban security people might have sunk around the block. The walls were sealed to keep out water, but silent pumps were kept busy draining away the seepage. Clark led Pitt down a long ladder to the bottom, and then through a passage that ran for nearly 2 city blocks before ending at a shaft. They climbed up and emerged in a fitting room of a women's dress shop. The shop had closed 6 hours earlier, and the window displays effectively blocked any view of the interior. Sitting in the storeroom were 3 exhausted, haggard-looking men who gave barely a sign of recognition to Clark as he entered with Pitt. "No need to know real names," said Clark. "May I present Manny, Moe, and Jack?" Manny, a huge black with a deeply trenched face, wearing an old faded green shirt and khaki trousers, lit a cigarette and merely glanced at Pitt with world-weary detachment. He looked like a man who had experienced the worst of life and had no illusions left. Moe was peering through spectacles at a Russian phrase book. He wore the image of an academic, lost expression, unruly hair, neatly sculptured beard. He silently nodded and gave an offhand smile. Jack was the stereotype Latin out of a 1930s movie. Flashing eyes, compact build, fireworks teeth, triangular mustache. All he was missing was a bongo drum. He gave the only words of recognition. "Hola, Thomas. Come to pep talk the troops?" "Gentlemen, this is, Sam. He's come up with an angle that throws new light on the search."
"It better be damn well worth it to drag us off the docks," grunted Manny. "We've got little time to waste on asshole theories."
"You're no closer now to finding the bomb than you were 24 hours ago," Clark said patiently. "I suggest you listen to what he has to say."
"Screw you," Manny said. "Just when we found a way to slip on board one of the freighters, you call us back.
You could have searched every inch of those ships and never found a 1.5-ton nuclear device," said Pitt. Manny turned his attention to Pitt, eyes traveling from feet to hair, like a linebacker sizing up an opposing halfback.
"Okay, smartass. Where's our bomb?"
"3 bombs," Pitt corrected, "and none of them nuclear." There was silence in the room. Everyone but Clark appeared skeptical. Pitt pulled the map from under his shirt and unfolded it. He borrowed some pins from a mannequin and stuck it on one wall. He was not put off by the indifferent attitude of the group of CIA agents. His eyes showed him these men were alert, precise, and competent. He knew they possessed a remarkable variety of skills and the absolute determination of men who did not take failure lightly. The Amy Bigelow is the first link in the Holocaust chain. Her cargo of 25,000 tons of ammonium nitrate...
"That's nothing but fertilizer," said Manny.
"Is also a highly volatile chemical," Pitt continued. "If that amount of ammonium nitrate were to explode, its force would be far greater than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They were airdrops, and much of their destructive power was lost in the atmosphere. When the Amy Bigelow blows at ground level, most of her power will sweep through Havana like a hurricane of molten lava. The Ozero Zaisan, whose manifest claims she's carrying military supplies, is probably crammed to the top of her holds with munitions. She'll unleash her destructive horror in a sympathetic explosion with the Amy Bigelow. Next, the Ozero Baikai and her oil will ignite, adding to the devastation. Fuel storage tanks, refineries, chemical plants, any factory with volatile materials will go up. The conflagration can conceivably last for days." Outwardly, Manny, Moe, and Jack appeared uncomprehending, the expressions on their faces inscrutable. Inwardly, they were stunned by the unthinkable horror of Pitt's vision of hell. Moe looked at Clark.
"He's on dead center, you know."
"I agree. Langley misread the Soviets' intent. The same result can be achieved without resorting to nuclear terror." Manny rose and clasped Pitt's shoulders between 2 great clamshell hands.
"Man, I gotta hand it to you. You really know where the crap flows."
Jack spoke up for the first time.
"Impossible to unload those ships before the celebration tomorrow."
"But they can be moved," said Pitt.
Manny considered that for a moment.
The freighters might clear the harbor, but I wouldn't bet on getting the tanker underway in time. We'd need a tug just to shove her bows toward the channel.
Every mile we put between those ships and the harbor means 100,000 lives spared, said Pitt.
Might give us extra time to look for the detonators, said Moe.
If they can be found before we reach open sea, so much the better.
And if not, Manny muttered grimly, we'll all be committing suicide.
Save your wife the cost of a funeral, said Jack with a death's head smile. There won't be anything left to bury.
Moe looked doubtful.
We're way short of hands.
How many ship's engineers can you scrape up? Asked Pitt.
Moe nodded across the room.
Manny there used to be a chief engineer. Who else can you name, Manny?
Enrico knows his way around an engine room. So does Hector when he's sober.
That's three, said Pitt. What about deckhands?
15, 17, including Moe and Jack, answered Clark.
That's 20, and I make 21, said Pitt.
What about harbor pilots?
Every one of them bastards is in Castro's pocket, snorted Manny. We'll have to steer the ships clear ourselves.
Wait just a damned minute, interjected Moe. Even if we overpowered the security force guarding the docks, we'd still have the ship's crews to fight.
Pitt turned to Clark.
If your people take care of the guards, I'll eliminate the crews.
I'll personally lead a combat team, replied Clark. But I'm curious as to how you intend to accomplish your end of the bargain.
Already done, Pitt said with a wide grin. The ships are abandoned.
I'll guarantee that the crews have been quietly evacuated to a safe place outside the destruction zone.
The Soviets might spare the lives of their own people, said Moe, but they'd hardly give a damn about the foreign crew on the Amy Bigelow.
Sure, but on the other hand, they couldn't risk a nosy crewman hanging around while the detonating device was placed in position.
Jack thought a moment, then said, 2 and 2 make 4. This guy is sharp.
Manny gazed at Pitt with a newfound respect in his eyes.
You with the company?
No, Numa.
Second guessed by an amateur, Manny sighed. Time to take my pension.
How many men do you estimate are patrolling the ships? Clark asked him.
Manny took out a soiled handkerchief and blew his nose like a honking goose before answering.
About a dozen guarding the Bigelow. Same number around the Zaisson. A small patrol boat is moored next to the oil tanker, probably no more than 6 or 7 in her crew.
Clark began to pace back and forth as he spoke.
So that's it. Gather up your crews. My team will take out the guards and protect the operation.
Manny, you and your men will get the Amy Bigelow underway.
Moe, take the Ozero Zaisson.
The tugboat is your department, Jack. Just make sure there isn't an alarm when you pirate it. We've got 6 hours of daylight left. Let's make good use of every minute.
He stopped and looked around.
Any questions?
Moe raised a hand.
After we make open water, what happens to us?
Take your ship's motor launch and beat it as fast and as far as you can before the explosions.
No one made a comment. They all knew their chances bordered on hopeless.
I'd like to volunteer to go with Manny, said Pitt. I'm pretty fair with a helm.
Manny came to his feet and slapped a hand on Pitt's back that knocked the wind from him.
By God, Sam, I think I might learn to like you.
Pitt gave him a heavy stare.
Let's hope we live long enough to find out.